Welcome to What Are Jobs and How Do You Get Them? I'm Rory Walsh, PhD, and that's right, like many PhDs, I've often found myself wondering, wait, what are jobs? Here to help me answer that today is Kate Ketchum. Kate, thank you for being here.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing great. Kate, what is your job?
I am a cinematographer.
Amazing. How did you get that job?
That's a more complicated question than it sounds like it is. I work in the film industry, and I'm in charge of the lighting and camera departments. I moved to Los Angeles about 12 years ago, and I had a background in liberal arts. I did photography, and I took classes at a local community college to get technical skills and learn how cinema camera works different from still cameras, learn lighting and grip, which is basically everything that's between a light and an actor. Any way that you change the light is grip department. And I took those classes, and then I crewed in basically all the departments below the DP. So I've been like slowly climbing this hierarchy of departments because film sets are very hierarchical. I did grip, and then I was an electric, and I've been a key grip and a gaffer, and those are the heads of those departments. So key grip's in charge of all the grips, gaffer's in charge of all the electrics. And then I shifted over to camera department because the DP is in the same union as the camera department, and I wanted to not have to change unions. Union electrics have to carry a lot of really heavy cables, and they have really big back problems. And I was like, I don't want that. So I shifted to camera, and there I was a second assistant camera, a first assistant camera, who is the person who pulls the focus. And now I still camera operate a fair amount when I'm not being the cinematographer. Like, those are the two jobs I do the most at the moment. But it's a long process of just like meeting the right people. Yeah.
That's very helpful. It also makes sense of a lot of movie credits, I think, for our listeners. And to clarify as well, the DP, the director of photography, is the same person as the cinematographer.
Yes, that is the same job.
Wonderful. Thank you. So this is not a 9-to-5 job. This is gig-based.
Yes, it is freelance and gig-based.
How predictable would you say your work is at this point?
It's not. The work always shows up, but it's all sort of network-based in this way where things change often. Like, sometimes jobs cancel very last minute because something changed. The location dropped. There was bad weather. Your talent schedule changed. But often I've had days where, like, I had a really long job and it canceled, but then something else popped up. I've also had months where I had a couple days of work and then someone called me for a better job. And I thought, oh, I'll flip it. And I got a sub for the other job. And then the better job canceled. And then I had no work. So that happens. Very unpredictable.
Yeah. So with this job, can you afford to buy your mom a Lexus?
Eventually I might be able to, but right now I cannot.
You hope.
Yeah, the film industry, from observation and also my experience, I think it's basically you make no money for a long time until something breaks through to like the larger markets, the studios, like some sort of major sale. Or for a cinematographer, like for a writer or director, it's like you sell a script or you sell a project. We're technically below the line. The line in a film set, people hear this term. It's basically the line producer. People who are above the credits, above the line producer, or below the line producer. But it also is like people above the line usually get residuals from a film or TV show or whatever. And people below the line do not. They are paid for their labor. And then it's sort of over. DPs are a little weird. Like, we're technically below the line, but often we work really closely with producers and directors and sometimes might get producing credit. But mostly it's just you make the money for a project. So you make more and more day rates the higher end stuff you do. So like big commercials, big studio features, those things have the best rates. And like you can make a lot of money from those things. And then maybe I could buy my mother a Lexus. But right now I mostly shoot like independent shorts. And sometimes I get doc interviews. And those don't pay enough for that. They pay enough to pay my bills in my Los Angeles apartment and maybe go on vacation occasionally.
Hey, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah.
Yeah. When is the last time you were at work?
I was at work yesterday.
Oh, amazing.
I wasn't paid for my work yesterday. Oh. Sometimes you do work for free for friends so that you can make stuff that looks cool, which is what I did yesterday.
Yeah, that sounds fun. So what did you do? What did your day consist of?
Well, yesterday I shot a music video for some musicians who are my friends. This is maybe not representative. We can discuss a more typical day. I put a bunch of cameras in a backpack and we hiked down a trail. And at the bottom of the trail was a really beautiful place we wanted to film. And then we decorated it and people put on costumes and we filmed things. I was filming it on like an early 2000s video camcorder because that's very trendy with Gen Z right now to film things on like vintage video equipment. And then we filmed some of it like on my DSLR because I wasn't being paid. So I didn't rent a fancier camera.
Yeah, that sounds fair.
Yeah. I think it's going to look really cool, though. It was really fun.
That's great. Well, to stay in the same vein, what's the coolest thing you did for work in the last year?
In the last year. This year has been tough for the film industry. I believe people are aware.
Summer of strikes.
Yeah. I'm going to put that in two categories because I think people are like impressed when you do things with cool people. Like basically my paid work as a camera operator, I'm working at a higher level. And so I get to sometimes work with cool talent. But then on my own as a cinematographer, I'm like trying to build connections with cool creative collaborators. And so then sometimes I have creative opportunities, but they're not anything that's big or fancy yet.
Yeah.
So I would say like as a camera operator, my two main things that paid my bills this year were I operate on the Hollywood Reporter roundtables. They do like this roundtable conversation before the Emmys and before the Oscars with directors and actors and actresses. And that's always really cool. Like I get to hear really interesting people talk and be in the room with like people I really admire. And that's been a really fun job. And the other one is that I've been operating on a reality show called Trixie Mattel with the drag queen Trixie Mattel. And it's like, we're produced by the Scott brothers who do, like, they're the Property Brothers on HGTV. It's a fun show. Like, Trixie and all of her friends are very funny and very fun. And it's been, like, a very silly, great job. But also, I think whenever it comes up, she has a large fan base. And what I tell them is just, like, Trixie's actually fantastic.
Aww.
On the creative front, I'm really excited about something I actually haven't shot yet, which I'm shooting next month, a sci-fi short called Above the Salt that is shooting in West Virginia, which is where I grew up. And it's sort of like Contact or Arrival. Like it's a really beautiful script. The locations are really gorgeous. I get to film at like a radio telescope array in the Appalachian Mountains, jazzed about it and working right now to make sure that that's as good as it can be.
That sounds really cool. All right, so we talked about taking community college classes for technical skills. Can you tell me more about your educational background?
Yeah, so my undergraduate, basically when I went to undergraduate, I didn't know that like cinematographer was a job.
That's what we're trying to do here.
That's what we're trying to do here, yeah. When I went to undergrad, I knew I really liked art. I really liked books. I wound up with a degree in English and religious studies and basically almost a minor in art history. I wound up not completing that for logistical reasons, but I also worked some in art museums and all that stuff. So from that, I eventually figured out I wanted to be a cinematographer. I found out it was a career. And so when I moved to LA, like I said, I went to community college in part because it was like post the recession. I didn't want to spend a lot of money on education when I already had sort of a fancy undergraduate from a good school. And I knew that all the other things that are in film programs is like film studies stuff. Like it's very liberal arts core ideas just applied to film. And I was like, I know this. I did a liberal arts degree. I need technical things. So I did that. And what I found coming out of community college was I got amazing technical skills. I'm really good friends with the person who ran that program, and they've been a really good mentor to me. I think I maximized the opportunities you can get from community college film school, but I still found that my network was not great because it's really an industry where who you know is really important. And people who go to community college don't have the best access to like power or capital for productions. And so I worked for a while and built my skills, but my mentor at community college, he went to the American Film Institute, AFI, which as someone who like I've always worked in and around education. So I often had part-time jobs at different schools. Like I have a very strong sense of the film programs in Los Angeles and they all have different focuses. Like I'd say USC is more for people who want to be like producer, writer, directors. But as someone who knew I wanted to be a cinematographer and really was interested in collaboration and connecting with the right directors and producers and people that I would want to work with, like that's how AFI focuses their education. It's a conservatory model. They'll have like a class of writers, a class of directors, a class of producers, a class of cinematographers. And it's extremely well known for its cinematography program. So my mentor basically was like, when it's right for you to level up, you'll know when you start to like hit a wall and you need to like shift something, that's when like grad school is probably the right choice. And so I did eventually, I'd been working probably about five, six years when I applied to AFI and I went to that film program, which I graduated in 2021. And that's sort of when I was able to shift from like camera assisting to operating and DPing. But I also was there during the pandemic, so it was sort of a very weird experience. I started in 2019 and 3/4 of the way through my first year that happened. So it was different than it usually looks, but it still was a very important part of my film journey for sure.
Yeah, it does sound like it is hard to figure out how to support yourself through a long journey like this.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. The weird thing about LA is a city.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are people with normal jobs in LA. There are. I have some very good friends who are like teachers or like work in a business. But everyone who works in and around film and music and all these creative industries, everyone has like some sort of mix and it's different. Like one of my backup jobs has always been that I worked at the New York Film Academy as like a part-time whatever they would give me person. Like I was a TA and now I'm an instructor. My background was working in education.
Yeah.
Everyone has to have like a hierarchy of jobs. They have to be flexible so that you can bounce from one to another so that you can sort of easily say, oh no, I got this amazing opportunity, but they'll still let you come back.
Yeah.
And a lot of people like food service is famous for actors, but everyone has a different mixture. And it's weird that it's super normal here and just not really anywhere else.
Though I think increasingly a lot of people in a lot of places are looking at diversifying their income streams.
No, that's true. And like we talk a lot in the press about like how the gig economy has shifted in the last 10 to 15 years. And I think film was always like that. You have to advocate for yourself and you have to know your worth and you have to ask for your rate and know when you're willing to take a cut in your rate for some other reason. It's something that when I shifted to film was very stressful.
Right. You're a business and you're running your business.
And you don't get paid for that labor.
No, you can't invoice the time you spent making the invoice.
Exactly. And so like the more little jobs you have, the like more frustrating it is.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about that for people who aren't on screen, because we do think about actors as waiting tables and things like that. But everybody making television and movies and music videos and everything you're doing, everybody's making it work for themselves in whatever way they can.
And actually this year in 2023 with all these strikes, something that's been interesting is like once you're a union and you're at a certain level and if you're working on bigger, longer shows, like there is more stability and some people make that choice. I haven't really because I transitioned to this industry later and I really want to be an artist who gets paid for making things I like. So I really have focused on like paying my bills while I'm trying to become a cinematographer faster. But I could have been like a union camera assistant and be working on a show and making like $7.50 a day. People are like, oh, that's a lot of money. And then you're like, no, but like,
it's a 12-hour day.
It's still good. But like also how many days do you actually work?
Yeah.
And it is for like a standard 12-hour day and you get more overtime after 12.
Ooh.
Which happens a lot in TV.
Yeah.
It's become less cool to do a lot of overtime. But for like TV shows, for network stuff, like it's common to have really long days because they want a schedule. So there's less flexibility in their schedule for production. For people who do that this year with the strikes, their network is all union. And while usually that's more stable, they've had zero work. Whereas people who are a little more scrappy, who have a more diverse network, like I've had work this year because I also know people in documentary and reality that I've been teaching. Like because it's more diversified, I've had somewhere to land when shows have been non-existent.
A lesson for us all. What sucks about the job?
The hours. I think everyone who works in film talks about this. It's really hard to find life-work balance in this industry because so much of it is tied to networking and stuff. And like realistically, a lot of people who work in film, like most of your friends also work in film and their schedules are also unpredictable. And when you hang out, you inevitably like you want to see them, but you're also kind of networking. So is it ever like not work?
Oh, yeah.
I think these are the things that people struggle with. When you're on set, film is so much fun. It's really just like getting to make this beautiful art with your friends. And sometimes it's very silly and sometimes it's really beautiful. But like you are working longer days than really bodies are designed to work.
Yeah.
And it's hard to have a social life and it's hard to have hobbies. I was at a party last night with some friends. I say a party. We went to an art walk. It was very fun. But it was something where we were all like trying to like be normal people. They were all filmmakers, but we didn't know each other from before. So we could like just be normal and not talk about work all the time. And we followed each other on Instagram. And someone was like, oh, do you do this network thing? It's like a thing in LA where they have tennis, just like a tennis club. I had followed on Instagram because a friend did it. And I was like, that seems fun. That seems like a thing I could do? And he was like, I love that. And we had this great conversation about trying to find these spaces where you could engage in like the parts of you that are not linked to your work.
Yeah.
And that's a conversation I have a lot with people because I think we all struggle with it.
Yeah. It's a very you are the job kind of job.
It is. And also, I think the flip of this is linked because of the long days and because of how intense the schedule is. There's like a lot of adrenaline working on film sets and like coming off the end of the day and getting to sleep, making that all work. And then like when you come off a job, like a show or a movie, what do you do tomorrow?
Yeah.
That's a transition a lot of people struggle with. I'm a pretty centered person, so I have this problem, but like people really struggle with like alcohol and addiction problems. Mm-hmm. For me, like I have this whole pattern where like I really love cooking and reading and hiking. Those are like my three main things that are not film.
Such vices.
I know. But I'll like use all that intense energy I have left over from film set, but do it to do something that's really even.
Yeah. And kind of transition out of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's my transition activity to come down from set. Yeah. But it's something a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really solid adulting right there. Okay. So is this job and your industry in general, is it historically dominated by people of a given, say, gender or race? And is that still very much affecting the workplace?
Yes. Film in general. This year in particular, there's a lot of press about Nepo babies. Nepo babies are very real in film. It's expensive to make. It's very complicated. You have to have a lot of capital that is stable to like move forward with financing things. So film in general is like dominated by white people and historically men in general. But cinematography in particular is like 7% women or something.
Woo!
Because also historically cameras were really heavy.
Right.
It was kind of a blue collar job.
Yeah.
So it was something where like families of brothers do, you know, like women are too petite for these heavy cameras, which is no longer true. Like the cameras are so much smaller and more manageable. And I know so many female cinematographers.
Yeah.
But like, even for me, I think my family is pretty middle class. But in order to move out here, like the fact that if something went awry and the bottom fell out, I had somewhere to go. Mm-hmm. Or my parents could maybe float me a month.
Yeah.
They haven't really, but just like knowing that they could.
It's a big difference.
And even when I was talking about like going union versus trying to struggle up to be a DP, right? Like a lot of the people I know who have gone union instead and just been a crew person, those are people who don't have a lot of financial stability in their family for whatever reason. Like often that's tied to like race or gender or class. It's just hard to make these big leaps. And it helps when people have a lot of assets. And it helps who you know too.
Yeah.
I remember there was a question about like how those things can impact climbing the ladder. And something I thought about a lot coming up was like mentorship is really important. Mm-hmm. And how you get recommended for jobs, right? Because that's how you climb up in this industry, is really just like someone saying, oh, you know who's great, this person. And I have this whole theory in terms of just like trying to bring in more diverse people. I think everyone just ends up wanting to help people who remind them of themselves. Like it's not mean. It's just like power is distributed unevenly. And people like to help people who look like themselves. So I would often be on like all women set or like women and people of color sets who are trying to help each other, but they're very low budget. And like, do those connections go anywhere? Not necessarily. Versus like, I would see young men, often young white men, get these opportunities that I was jealous of, but it was really just that like they connected with someone who had more power. I think there are more systems in place in the industry to try and help with this. Like I myself have received like a formal mentorship from the American Society of Cinematographers that is through a program. They have like a committee. It's called the Vision Committee, and it's trying to diversify the ASC. And this mentorship thing they do now every year is really designed to help women and people of color and people who traditionally don't have that access come up. And I think those sorts of things are helping in some ways.
That's good. Yeah, that can be a very insidious thing. Just that intuitive connection that people who are similar and of similar background can have.
Right. And it feels innocuous because you're just like, but I just like them and I think they're great and I want to help them. But what you see is an unevenness of that help.
Yeah. And it becomes a structural institution-wide issue.
Yeah.
Would you say the industry and film sets, et cetera, are welcoming to LGBTQ plus individuals?
Yeah, I think in general. I'm trying to think if there are pockets that aren't. I think there must be. But, you know, LA thinks it's very liberal. And in terms of stories, I think the sort of people who end up as like the writers, especially, and directors, like the kinds of stories we want to tell, there is a leaning towards the outsider. I think there's a lot of theater kids, people who on the inside felt a little different, who end up going into creative industries.
Yeah.
And so I think it ends up being a safer space. In terms of like getting a producer or money or access to make those projects, I think it's shifted in the last 10 to 20 years as society has shifted because producers want to make money. But, you know, there's been so many really beautiful projects lately that are often like queer in a very gentle way. I'm thinking about like Love, Simon or like Red, White and Royal Blue, that adaptation. Like there's all these like little queer rom-coms and stuff because it's become for younger people totally normal. Hollywood is happy to reflect that and make money off of it. And the people who are here often identify with those stories and are really excited to make them.
Yeah.
I do think the like on the ground versus financing are different because Hollywood wants to make money.
It's got to be marketable.
It's got to be marketable. And I even like with access to jobs, like I have a lot of friends who are directors. And there's all these little programs for like people of color or like people whose voices aren't heard as often, trying to diversify the directing pool and the writing pool. But those are also all marketing opportunities for huge corporations. I've seen in terms of like who gets those opportunities, you have to show them how to market off of you.
You have to have a story.
Well, but you also have to have one like if you're a Black writer or director, you should tell a Black story. If you're a Latina,
yeah.
like a lot of writers and directors want to tell a variety of stories. I think there's a big conversation right now about what stories you're allowed to tell, right? Like, and there's a middle ground here in terms of like, we want to tell lots of kinds of stories, but understand our own lives best and our own communities best. When it comes to like getting those opportunities as like a director of color, you're wiser to make it something that looks the most like what like Disney or Sony or whatever Warner Brothers thinks they can make money off of. This is the thing in Hollywood. It's like they are happy to do things that help people as long as they get something from it too. That's what I found.
That's a very nuanced take. I really appreciate that. Now, in terms of being inclusive and accommodating to people with disabilities, how's the industry doing?
I read that question on your sheet, and that's tricky for my industry in particular.
Yeah, there's lifting heavy objects involved.
Yeah, like my job is like, and something I worry about is if I were injured. Like part of why I have a master's degree, because AFI has a program that you can drop out after 1 year and you still get a lot from the program in terms of network and all this stuff, and you spend half as much money. But like, I finished my master's degree. Like, I love my thesis. There's no regrets, but it was because I was like, then I can teach anywhere. If I hurt my back or if I hurt my eyes and I can't do my job anymore, then like I can teach. Yeah, I don't know that film is the most accommodating to disabilities. I think it depends on the disability. I think, again, there is this liberal attempt to be open, but there is a logistical reality to this profession where like you need to be able-bodied.
Yeah, right. And as a cinematographer, you need your sight. And it seems like even on a film set, if you had limited hearing, it would be difficult.
And I have some friends who do have that problem, actually. Like one of my directors was blind in one eye. And I have a friend who's a fellow DP who is deaf in one ear. And you have to like announce it to the set so that people know to watch out for that and not like talk to you on that side. There's so many things happening on a film set at the same time. Being able to like passively pay attention to all the things while you're having these really focused conversations, it's difficult if you're deaf in one ear, right?
Yeah.
I would think it'd be easiest to maybe work as a writer with a disability, but like,
well, there's an idea.
Yeah, it's tricky.
For sure. All right. So I am now going to ask you about a bunch of different skills, and you're going to tell me yes or no if this skill is useful in your job. It's rapid fire. You ready?
Yes.
Critical thinking.
Yes.
Put your socks on while you're standing up.
Not necessary.
Fantastic. Bookkeeping.
Yes.
We've even talked about that one. Mixed martial arts.
Not necessary, but could be helpful.
Basic Python and SQL.
Not necessary, but could be helpful.
How about childhood trauma that causes you to undervalue personal relationships in pursuit of quantifiable goals?
I would advocate against that, but also it could have a positive impact.
And Adobe Creative Suite.
Useful.
Great. Thank you. That concludes the skills section. Okay. Thank you. So I think most people have a sense of a lot of the jobs that go into making a film. What are some jobs that people might not know about that you think are cool?
There's all these weird little niche things that you're like, you get to do that? And yeah, that comes up all the time.
Yeah, I know. I just said that, and then I'm like, what are they? What are they? SFX makeup, for example, is cool. Ooh. Like people who like build out weird wounds for like horror films, or like I did a film that had a creature suit and we got to work with this whole production house that makes creature suits. They're very cool. And there's people who like program lights. Like when you get to higher end stuff, there's a lot of interest in lights that like move and change color, and you do it from like a board with switches. That's something I need to find me a gaffer that does that, because I'm not on my own grade at that, but I think it's like really interesting for lighting and really useful. So those will be my keeping it brief. Those are my top ones.
Awesome. Thank you. Now, let's imagine you're talking to a young person, plausible scenario, and that person thinks your job is the coolest and they want to have it. But you are worried because this young person seems amazing. And what if they put you out of your job? You can't give them good advice. You have to give them terrible advice that they do not succeed. What do you say to sabotage them?
Okay, I want to say to start that I'm sad about this premise because as like a way of managing your career. I think that I try to always make everyone's life better, but this is a thing that people worry about. So I would tell them to do exactly what you're asking me to do, which is to undercut people, because no one likes that. Ooh. Because long term, everyone has to work together, because this town is small. And the longer you're here, the more people leave because it's hard. If you get a reputation for being someone who undercuts people and is an asshole. But I would tell them that. I would be like, no, you need to watch out for yourself. You need to like be a hard ass, because that's the opposite of my strategy in filmmaking.
Fantastic. I think that's really great advice that sounds good and is in fact very, very bad.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, Kate, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yeah, this was super fun.
We really appreciate your insight. Thanks for listening to What Are Jobs and How Do You Get Them? A production of Momentous Coaching. Please visit whatarejobs.com for episode transcripts and more information. Want to talk to us about your job? Make your way to whatarejobs.com. This podcast was co-produced by myself and Erica Irvin, and edited by Clayton Izuka, Sketch Smith, and Kyle Blinn. Our theme music was composed by Clayton Izuka.